You want to take it on to paper 13.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Well, today we would like to present to you two papers. We plan to discuss them in an hour, just about an hour. The first paper is an ARSOP amendment that we had proposed on the characterization of methods of depreciation and amortization. And we have agenda papers 13, 13A, and 13B. And the purpose of these papers is to provide you with an interpretations committee's recommendation to finalize these proposed amendments to IS 16 and IS 38 and provide the clarification about the use of these methods. These proposed amendments were published back a year ago in December 2012. They were exposed for comment. We received 98 comment letters. The Interpretations Committee has been discussing the outcome, the input that we received from these comment letters throughout the July and the September 2013 meetings. And as you could see in the paper, they expressed mixed views on how we can finalize this amendment. So we have provided a summary of these views in the paper, in paper 13A. But I can tell you that the main features of at least the majority of the Interpretations Committee's recommendation is to emphasize the principle for amortization and depreciation, to prohibit the use of revenue as a proxy for consumption, to provide additional guidance on the selection of an amortization method in IS 38, such as the determination of the limiting factor, and to apply the proposed amendment prospectively. So if the IFB agrees with this recommendation, we are planning to finalize this amendment in the first quarter of 2014. And the reason is because we have many things to finish this year. So it's just in the queue. And I've got, well, if you want to discuss, if you have any views on the approaches, but the idea is to finalize this amendment. I've got some questions in page 28 of 13A, or just feel free to comment on anything you would like.
Okay, so you want us to go to page 28 of 13A?
Yes, well, ideally, yes. Page 28 of 13A. Does the ISB agree with the Interpretations Committee recommendation about proceeding with the amendment to specify that the revenue-based depreciation amortization methods are not consistent with the general principles in IS 16 and IS 38?
Okay. Denise, I'm in favor of the majority view of the Interpretations Committee. I think that's a relatively sound way to proceed. I want to clarify, though, whether or not that majority view, in fact, means that the guidance that I think we offered in the basis for conclusions that you describe in paragraph 11 will, in fact, be deleted from either the basis or, more frankly, anywhere else in the document. I just want to understand exactly what we are saying about when a revenue method gives the same result as a consumption-based method, whether it's unit production or anything else. Are we completely silent, or are we being cut? Okay.
Well, in the basis for conclusions, I mentioned that this was included in the exposure draft at some point.
Right.
But because there was much confusion about that, because people interpreted this as if we were adding additional guidance in the basis for conclusion. Well, this explanation of when the revenue-based method equals a unit of production method was interpreted as additional guidance. And then people say, oh, yes, we can use revenue-based
method. It's kind of wishy-washy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So to avoid any misinterpretations and confusion, we decided to delete that. We just mentioned it, both.
Pat, just to that, if you look at 13B in the draft amendment, in the proposed amendment of IS 38, but not in the proposed amendment of IS 16, and I think that's the right way around, proposed paragraph 97, capital A, says, you know, notes that there is an unusual circumstance in which the intangible is expressed as a measure of revenue. So that's the example of, you have the right to collect X currency units of tolls or something like that, which seems the right conclusion. So I think that they have addressed the concern you have about whether we're giving with one hand and taking away with the other,
right,
and creating confusion. Denise, on the paper, I'm happy to support the interpretation committee's recommendation, and while generally I think we should leave the drafting to be between the staff and the interpretation committee to come up with the words, I did notice that there seems to be some confusion in paper 13B with some of the discussion that's proposed especially in the basis for the IS-16 amendment,
mm-hmm,
discussing intangible assets, and I think that discussion belongs in the basis for, and only in the basis for 38. I think there's maybe too much attempt at conforming the two, and so we're giving intangible examples in 16 and have a few other redundant things. I can take that offline for you to maybe feed back into the final review by interpretation committee members, but happy to support the, you know, I think the interpretation committee has worked through the issues.
Yeah, I don't agree with the recommendation because based on my knowledge and I think also the outreach which I had done in Germany and with some, especially from the media industry, I think they thought, okay, it's very helpful that we had in the basis for a conclusion BC3 and BC5, that okay, there could be situations where really this revenue base is a proxy really for principle-based amortization method, and they found it very helpful, and only, I think, could say, only guidance which they would help that, because based on their examples, I found it there are situations where this revenue base is a good proxy really for amortization. And if we delete that, I think there is not any guidance, and it is like we prohibit that. And I don't think that is appropriate, because we have in all the discussion found situations where it could be a proper proxy really for this amortization.
Do you have any comments on that? No? You don't have to.
Okay.
Well, just to say that in the paper we explain why we had to remove that. It's just either you prohibit or you allow it. You cannot be in between.
Yeah, but there was some, I think, from also the interpretation committee, there were some members who didn't agree. They think, okay, we should not have this kind of indirect prohibition of this.
Yes, I know. We took the majority view from them.
I agree with Martin and what he said, and agree with the minority view of the committee.
Okay. Chuck?
Yes, can I talk about the drafting question, which is the question 3, or are we stick to question 1? Okay, then. So just question 3. You are suggesting to remove paragraph 62B and adding some lines in the paragraph 56C.
Yes.
And I agree with adding some wording into the paragraph 56, and that would make the meaning clearer. I agree. However, I can't understand why you delete 62B. We could have both. Could you explain why you want to delete 62B?
Yes, because it was the objective of the amendment was not to provide guidance, specific guidance on the diminishing balance method, and it was distracting. It was a little bit distracting to leave that paragraph there. So.
Why distracting?
Because the main purpose of the amendment is to emphasize the principle for amortization and depreciation. It's not to refer more specifically to methods of depreciation and amortization. So I think also because paragraph 56C is related to the effect. Expected effect on the reduction of the selling price, we thought that it was better to include the amendment there.
Yeah, but we discussed this issue in the board, and because we are saying that revenue is not really the measurement of the consumption of the PPE. However, there is a case that good example is semiconductor production line, the price of the semiconductor could be a good indicator of a selection of the depreciation method. And if we say that revenue cannot be an indicator of the reduction of the consumption, and then the especially price, so price could be the indicator of the diminution and the indicator of obsolescence. So therefore, that's why we included this 62D. And then I can't understand why we should delete it. Of course, it's a little bit too much to talk about this here, because the purpose is, could be irrelevant. However, what's wrong having this literature? This is making clear you should distinguish this issue from the other revenue issues. So I can't understand why we have to delete this 62D.
Can I add to this that the elimination in itself could be perceived by some as a prohibition, an indirect prohibition? If we have something in the text that goes out, how will people interpret the fact that we take it out? Is it, does it mean implicitly that we now prohibit by being silent?
Exactly.
It's not in itself a new text. If you read it only, it doesn't say it's prohibited, but by comparison to the old text, it might be perceived as being a form of prohibition.
Although the words that we added to 56C were not in the exposure draft, so I take your point, Philippe, that something that was in the exposure draft was taken out, but they've put something else in its place.
Yes, we didn't delete it completely.
I'm not sure that the addition in 56C, which is indicated by future expected reduction in unit selling price, is the same thing as a declining balance method, because here it relates directly to selling prices. The declining balance might be decided or chosen on the basis of a different fact pattern, different set of circumstances, like the obsolescence of the equipment is higher in the first year, or the consumption of the economic benefit is higher in the first year. So you try to capture that through a declining balance method. It has nothing to do with selling prices. My point is some abstract. I'm not sure we really need to take out those words about declining balance to achieve what is the main goal of this amendment, to prohibit revenue-based depreciation. I don't see why it implies that we take out.
Okay.
Mary?
So if you look, paragraph 62 itself still keeps the discussion of diminishing balance, you know, what it is and what it achieves. It just was it was proposed in the AIP amplification that we're pulling back on. We aren't taking out the interpretation committee is not suggesting that we take out the only discussion of diminishing balance.
Yeah.
It was the amplification that they're saying that that's maybe confusing things. But 62, I think, confirms the ongoing validity of diminishing balance.
I do understand that Mary's point. Actually, 16 accepts diminishing balance. It's not prohibiting diminishing balance. It's clear. However, if we talk about revenue and the reason why the revenue-based depreciation is not good is because the price change has nothing to do with the consumption. However, there is a case that the price change could be an indicator to the obsolescence and diminishing of economic value of the assets. So that's why we thought we need to include 62D. I can't understand why we should delete it. I appreciate you add some literature into 56C. However, it only talks about depreciable amount and the depreciation period. It does not talk about depreciation method. So it doesn't help the problem I raised. So therefore, if we delete 62B, as Philip pointed out, that would indicate that we are going to prohibit doing this. So in this phase, to delete to be would not be helpful and just keep it.
Does it help if there is a basis of conclusion to explain what is the intent, why we did what we did? Maybe it's along the lines that Tark is talking a little bit more, because I was looking at the basis of conclusion, and maybe we can elaborate that.
Yes, so why the
so that the comment that Tark and Philippe are saying will not lead to inconsistent conclusions. I don't think that is the intent of the IFRIC or this board, but if that specter is ever raised, there's always something to fall back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gareth.
Yeah. I have a different question for Denise, and I support the overall interpretations committee conclusions. And it's in the intangible assets and dealing with the unusual circumstances which could get revenue-based amortization. And this is perhaps just a drafting question, but if you go through paragraphs 92 through 98, it's talking about making your best choice of systematic bases and things you can conclude and so on. But when you get to this exception, for revenue based when the limiting factor is just revenue, it's not clear to me if you're requiring that method or you're permitting that method as a choice. Either way, it just needs to be clarified in here, because I'm looking at paragraph 98A, and it says, in choosing the appropriate method, an entity could determine a limiting factor, which implies to me it's a choice. But you've got an exception here, and you go with some length in the verbiage telling you how to do it. So I just think we need to be clear, is this a requirement or an option? And I don't know.
And on that, the requirement is just the principle, which is about reflecting the pattern of consumption. The identification of the limiting factor is there as additional guidance to help you identify the method, the pattern of method of consumption. So it is not a requirement that you have to use the revenue basis, if in fact there is a different basis that would be more appropriate. There will often be more than one limiting factor that you could find.
Well, that's
for
the trouble that means there would only be,
exactly.
Get 5% of the first billion euros of revenue.
That's why I guess we were trying to be a little bit cautious and by stating put.
Okay, it just wasn't clear to me. I think the bias was that you could, but you got an entire paragraph on it, 98B. And earlier on, talking about unusual circumstance up in paragraph 97A, which usually you're talking about unusual circumstance, and you go on at some length what to do about it. To me, anyways, there's an inference that that's what you want us to do.
Right.
I think we need to make a real clarification that this is a permissible method, amongst others, specified in.
Good point. Why good?
I support Martin and Steve and Tata. Actually, the first time when Denise came to my office 2 years ago, I told him we should be careful. I told her we should be careful, particularly, in areas where, people use them as a surrogate. I clearly told her, consumption in physical terms, quite often the case, may not be used, and because you have, you produce different size of parts and a different size of car roll on the highways, and of course you can say that you can use some kind of ways to combine different physical substance together, but a normal way is to use mandatory amount. And then in many cases, we use revenue as a surrogate. But I don't want to say we should use purely in revenue as a basis, because it's not purely in line with our principles. But in normal case, when you truly useful as a surrogate. So I strongly suggest you, just like Martin said, we should be very careful how to handle this. I don't feel it will create confusion. It's just like, you know, to confirm this is in line with the principle. And secondly, I fully agree with, you know, Taka. You know, this is related to economic aspirations. And in terms of, in the case of chip and other, and price is important indicators of the economic expedition.
Thanks, Ian. I have to say that in this case, I'm also sympathetic to the minority view. I guess we received enough feedback from a particular industry or from particular industries that prove with examples that we are probably, as the minority group said, being too restrictive, and with that creating complexities in applying the principles for depreciation and amortization. So I think we might create other problems in not recognizing that revenue can be used as a basis for amortization.
Patricia.
On balance, I think I support the minority view as well. I've had concerns for a long time about particularly whether intangibles should be amortized on a revenue basis. I think that there are some instances where there is no other logical way to amortize an intangible asset than on a revenue basis. So to have such a strict interpretation of when it's appropriate for an intangible, I would be concerned about. I'm okay with a tangible asset, but intangible, I'm concerned about.
Harry.
I just wanted to come back and ask if we could think about how we deal with issues like this that we've asked in the Interpretations Committee to take up, because in this case, you know, an issue was identified. They listed it. They said there's a principle in the standards. The question that's been asked, they considered and said in the confines of the standard, it's inconsistent with the principle. Therefore, you know, we essentially contracted the work to them. They, you know, they did the work. We published the exposure draft. They analyzed the comments, and at least a majority concluded. If on balance our reconsideration of the work they've done leads us to say, if that's what the principle is, and the feedback we've gotten is that the principle should be changed, then I think we shouldn't just do it as an overlay to this annual improvement. You know, we've got to think about taking our own project to change the principle regarding depreciation or amortization in 16 and or 38. But if we have a group of people who are closer to practice than we are, and I would hope that they'd either come back in a situation like this and say, listen, the principle says X, so it would seem to preclude this, but we think that's a problem. Board, can you look at this? Let's straighten it out, because us basically redoing it after they've done it, it doesn't feel like the right utilization of resources. Feels like we owe kind of apologies to the interpretation.
Mary, it's my old hobby horse, but do you think it'd be a different attitude if this had come through as an interpretation? And they were saying, this is how I interpret the standard as it is.
No, I don't, because I think, at least in this case, what the papers from the staff recounting the Interpretation Committee consideration said, when we look back at the standard, you know, it says X, and X is, the principle is consumption, not value generated. Okay. And if they come back to us and said, we think this is a problem or it's not keeping up, you know, with developments, the type of assets, et cetera, that's a different thing. But I don't see why we get to this point and say, well, we maybe have some better ideas about how to do it?
Yeah, that's actually fine.
Yeah, because we are asked, because it's a narrow scope amendment, and if we are asked, do we agree with that, I think then we should maybe address our opinions. Otherwise, okay. It is not any worse that we are asked. If that, I maybe agree to you, but then, okay, it is a decision of an integration committee, and we should not be asked. But if we are asked, yes. I think it is appropriate that we can address our opinions and maybe have a different opinion as a majority view of the interpretation committee.
And so, yeah, I take the point, and I think you're right, and I kind of looked at this as, okay, we're being asked, do we see any fatal flaws in either the logic or the process if we ask them to take the lead on this process? And on that basis, no, I don't. But
is that our relationship with the interpretation committee, looking for fatal flaws or their due process?
Yeah, that was really part of my question, whether it would be different if it was an interpretation rather than a request for a narrow scope amendment. The other problem I have with narrow scope amendments is at the end of them, and this is the third one this morning, we say we should step back and review the whole standard. Yeah. Now, you know, we could probably find a reason to review every standard that we've got if we want to look at it. And so we've got to keep all this in context a little bit, I think. I mean, I don't know how big a problem this is in the market. I assume interpretation committees address that.
I think, given that it's origins and service concessions, I think it's probably a big deal in that area.
Well, yesterday the AP for the IAS-28, nobody said that. It pointed to the long grass. So I'm a little bit confused with this different opinions. One region asked the question, we say that is, and yesterday is 28, we said no, it's something we need to discuss it after 6 years. I'm a little bit puzzled with this line of thinking.
And where this came from initially was to do with service concessions.
And in
particular to do with obviously where you've got the intangible asset model. You know, I hear some of the comments about, well, you know, comfortable with 16, but perhaps less so with the proposal when it comes to IAS-38. And yet it's actually IAS-38 is where this issue had actually come from. And where there were particular concerns was where under the concession you're expecting or you're predicting future price increases, but because that gets factored into the revenue-based depreciation, you then get back-end loading of the depreciation charge. And as noted in the paper and in the proposed basis for conclusions, including the inflation factor in your depreciation or amortization calculation doesn't make sense, because there is no relationship between consumption of the benefits of the asset and inflation.
Yeah, but
they are independent.
I agree with everything you said, but does what they've done achieve that, or is it just, does it achieve more than that?
Exactly, that is a problem, right?
Well, what more could there be that they could have achieved? Because
they said no revenue-based depreciation.
Should they have just tried to say no back-end loading? Is that your comment?
Or don't include inflation factors in your estimate of revenue?
Revenue is quantity times price. Okay, quantity, yes, that's fine. You know, we say units of production is a good basis if you can use that. Price, though, that's where the inflation comes in. And so by saying you shouldn't be including inflation in the price, you're actually back to a quantity-based...
Michael, in a business combination, you acquire some intangible assets. You estimate their fair value based on the discounted cash flows that they will produce in terms of revenues. Then you have in your books a cost, which is present value of... How are you going to amortize this? There is no unit of production. It's only producing revenues. It's a license. Mm-hmm. How are you going to amortize, if not based on revenues?
I would look, as we've suggested in the proposed amendment, to the limiting factor. Now, is that a license that has a limited period of time, or is the license that is limited to a certain number of units produced?
No, I don't have the limiting factor effect in this case. In my fact pattern, I could not identify a limiting factor as described in 98B. So, what if I do not amortize? Because consider it's unlimited in time.
If there is no end to the life of the license, because you are the owner of it rather than the licensee.
Yeah, but presumably the value will diminish over time. I cannot say the value will be the same in 20 years from now. I can't prove it. I think I have to amortize it. So.
And we all had this example.
Hang on a minute. We have some people here who jump in and some people who wait. Sorry, it's not very democratic. So I think if you can just wait to be called.
Yeah.
And if you want a double hander, you know, to make a comment on what's been said, that's fine. You get precedence. But otherwise, wait until you're called. Way good.
On this issue, I want to say a bit more. Firstly, you know, if they say that the issue comes from Malaysia, and when the Guinness came to my office, I also said that we should be very careful. You know, inflation adjusted approach. Now, firstly, you know, toll roads related government regulatory, you know, activity side. This is why when we expose regulatory asset projects, people say, oh, should we take into consideration of that one? So regulator may tell you something based on different purpose, and we should forget some of them. But, you know, I will accept to some extent, firstly, if revenue is the surrogate, and secondly, inflation adjusted is also to some extent surrogate, I will agree with you. The reason why, think about a road built 30 years ago. It's a very low cost. And the toll increased gradually. I'm not sure, you know, let's assume you still amortize the asset based on historical cost. And can give you any useful information. And we, in the UDT of the conceptual framework, I strongly support in the measurement chapter clearly says you should take into consideration both balance sheet and income statement. You know, I don't want to get into further. But I, to some extent, I have sympathy of their approach. And secondly, we should be very careful politically. I should tell you, among LSP members, there are a little bit more countries now are reluctant to move quickly for adoption. The reason is, you know, sometimes they raise one or two issues. We just reject or give them answers, which sometimes they don't feel appropriate. I personally also sometimes feel appropriate. I should say we should be very careful to handle some issues from this region.
Okay. This reminds me of the discussions that took place in the Interpretations Committee, and I think it comes back to, I think I'm reading this right, Steve. It's a drafting issue in a sense, but that's where the Interpretations Committee struggles, because if you've got a method that is correlated with the revenue pattern, the wording in here almost implies that's wrong. And there are going to be cases where, in fact, the revenue and consumption are correlated. And so it's a matter of what you're trying to do is to have it where, in my wording, something like, you know, if you have a method that's based on revenue with no consideration of consumption patterns, that's not appropriate. But if the revenue is related, then you don't want to stop that. And I think this is the trouble, is that some of the wording in here almost implies that if they're correlated, you can't do it. And I think that's where some of the kickbacks come back. The discussion is exactly the same as we had at the Interpretations Committee, and I think everyone understands the principle, but it is actually just a drafting thing. And I'm a bit worried that we've we've gone too far. We've over-engineered this to the point that you actually can't have one that's correlated.
Mary. Sorry, Patricia.
I agree with what Alan said. I mean, that's my primary concern, particularly with intangibles, that I thought we'd gone too far. And I think in the debate about whether and when a revenue method is appropriate, I think people sometimes, particularly in the concession example, get confused between the amortization of an intangible asset and they're thinking about the underlying road. And that's not all. Is the intangible meant to be a surrogate for the underlying road, which might be wearing out fast, or did they buy a license to operate a road that was already there? Someone else is going to take care of it. And what they paid for that license, they considered the fact that the tolls were going to increase with inflation in determining what they were willing to pay for it. And so you can see a logic of then amortizing that cost over the benefits they thought they were supposed to receive. And I know it's matching and we're not supposed to do that. But in inventory, I mean, IAS 2 says you don't expect your cost of goods sold until you recognize the revenue. That's matching. And why would you do that with tangible inventory and not do it with an intangible that produced the same revenue? So that's where I get sort of concerned.
Okay, I think we've got the board almost split.
Yeah.
Seven or eight each way, I think. 15 here, which leaves us in a bit of a quandary. I wonder if the latter two suggestions of just having a look at the wording to not make it so definite, not such a clear line. Is that a sensible suggestion, do you think?
We can certainly explore that, and I think that the challenge is going to be to make sure the guidance is clear and realistic at the same time, because, you know, the problems we had before was that we were identifying a proxy. A proxy is something that's an approximation for something else. Well, what is it the approximation for? And that's what we're trying to focus on. So what are you using as your approximation, but what are you trying to approximate to should be the focus. That's what we're trying to achieve with this, and obviously we've not succeeded in some of you.
I've started the debate again. PK. PK's got a double handed turn, I guess, all we need here.
Is there a parliamentary language? Stupid maybe, but not stupid. Question, just to understand, Patricia, because I remember when we were balloting this last year, the discussion, and I think the clarification that was sought in IAS 38 to give when it is done. Are you suggesting, maybe I misheard you, are you suggesting that in some situation the back-end depreciation is appropriate or amortization is appropriate? Is that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, I just wanted to make...
For an intangible, it might be.
Yeah.
But I just thought you made a summary of 50-50. I'm just sensing that perhaps it's 75-25. So I think it's good for Stolf to get the clear direction. I'd be happy to support Martin's direction. I think we have quite a few having said that. I've heard very few speak in favor of the...
Okay. I interpreted silence as consent. But do you want to have a show of hands just to get an idea?
Good idea.
All right. Well, who would support the interpretations committee's recommendation?
Six.
And who's against? I guess that should be nine.
Good math.
Well, it's not against, it's supporting the minority view of
yes,
the
yes,
it's
yeah.
not against the wall. It's like,
Ian, can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
I want to answer it.
Well, we
Power
have
is nine. Nine, six.
The proposed wording in BC3 and BC5 were not objectionable to me. The fact that they were removed didn't bother me either. It's the suggestion that I think that I'm hearing here, and I want to clarify, is that we would make clear that revenue data is not, or revenue is not a good basis on which to measure the pattern of consumption of future economic benefits, but that there are circumstances where a revenue-based method may give you the same result as a consumption-based method, I'm fine with that. Because then we're not saying that, in fact, you can use revenue-based methods. All we're saying is when they serve as a proxy for a consumption-based method, that's fine. If that's what the minority view is saying, I'm sanguine with that. But if they're saying something different, meaning you have to look to the underlying.
No, I'm saying you don't look to the underlying.
Well, I don't know whether or not other people are in that camp, though.
I think the surrogate thing drives you to look to the underlying, because I think what people think in the concession situation is it's a surrogate for the decrease in the value of the road. And it's not supposed to be a decrease.
To me, this is
the
same debate, you know, we've had in the lease project. You know, are you accounting for the intangible, or are you accounting for the underlying? And, you know, we've built this theory around consumption, which, frankly, has just created complexity and made a mess of that whole situation. So I think it's important we clarify exactly what we're saying. And as I said, I'd be happy with the concepts and the words in paragraph 11, you know, being built into this. And I think that solves Martin's problem. He's nodding. He said yes.
Well, we have a process problem here, don't we?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know which way hands would vote, so that's interesting. We've got 9-6 at the moment. It could be 9-7 or 10-6, depending on what he thinks ultimately.
But from what I hear, I wonder whether if we were able to work something on the wording to overcome some of the concerns that were raised, whether that would then move us in the other direction to a majority.
Is everybody happy for the staff to have a go at that and bring it back?
Yeah.
Rather than making the decision this morning?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Good.
It's possible also to solve the SACAS issue, not only Marty.
I think that's been the principal concern.
Well, the staff can come and deal with you all to talk about what needs to be addressed.
No. The mic was saying not.
Excuse me, I couldn't hear you.
They told you to put it in the basis. Explain it in the basis.
Yes. Maybe explaining basis is fine, but it's a significant issue, definitely.
All right, thank you. We'll move on to the next agenda item, paper number 18, and lucky Denise is going to lead us through it.
Better luck this time.
The purpose of this paper 18 is to provide, again, the IFB with a recommendation from the IFRS Interpretations Committee to finalize the proposed amendment.